The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the smoky Carter Subaru Studios. Man, I was driving down I-5 this morning. The closer I got, the more I thought, that could be the radio station that's on fire.
And thankfully, it was not, but we sure got a lot of the smoke.
You know, the first thing went through my head when I thought it might be the radio station
You wouldn't have to go to work today.
No. How are we going to get on the air? But honest to goodness, I wasn't thinking about Nicole's and your safety. I wasn't thinking about getting a day off. I was
just thinking about our listeners.
How are we going to get on the air if it's the radio station?
I'll tell you what, there was one time. Do you remember a couple of years ago when we almost, there was such a massive fire and it was creosote filled?
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do?
Right.
Because we may have to evacuate the station.
Then I realized when that was my first thought, I'm just a sick man. I'm just sick.
Well, thankfully, no one was injured in this
fight. Yes, exactly.
Today.
Okay, we've got a lot to get to. Let's jump right into the big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
I don't like speed cams. Never have, never will, because they were built on a lie. They told us that it was about public safety. When Linwood did their big expansion, I offered every member of the Linwood City Council to come in here and take a polygraph test that I would pay for and tell me that this is about public safety and not revenues. Speed cams are built on lies. There's one speed cam in King County that also, in particular, has been built on a lie. And it's another great piece of watchdogging by our friend Jesse Jones at Cairo 7 News, who joins us live as we begin this Friday afternoon. Jesse, always good to talk to you, my friend.
Dory, my man, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Okay. So you sounded like somebody there, but I couldn't put my finger on who it was. Okay, tell me about this speed camera that was brought to your attention, Jesse.
Yeah. We had a guy call us. His name's Reese Rabin. And he calls me up and he says, the speed camera on Southwest Roxbury, the City of Seattle speed cam that's on Southwest Roxbury near Holy Family Elementary, is actually in King County. And I was like, what? Nah, man. You know how many crazy calls I get a day? How many crazy calls do you get a day?
We're probably neck and neck. So, yes, I do know how many. Yes.
Right, right. Something, though, just told me to roll out there.
You know what? That's the thing, Jesse, that I think you're great at. I think I've gotten really good at it. There's something about certain, you know, emails and calls that I can almost immediately vet, and I'm sure you have developed the same skill to where you're not chasing too many wild goose stories.
Yeah, and the thing was that it made me think about the whole efficacy of the speed cam anyway, and that's a whole other thing we can get into. But
sure.
I kind of went, all right, let's just roll out there and see what this guy's talking about. Called him up, met him. He stood right there, and he said, hey, 21st Avenue Southwest, and Roxbury, in the middle of the street, is the boundary line. If you take a look at the speed camera, it is 30 feet. He said it was 20 feet into King County. And I was like, okay. So I did some research. I took a couple of days to really try to find it. Went down to the city archives, got the actual ordinance, went all over the place. Then I called an actual surveyor, and I said, I need you to do this for me.
Sure.
Some folks from Group 4 from Lake Stevens came down. They pinpointed it, and they were like, Jesse, it is 30 feet into King County.
So a city of Seattle
speed cam
was set up outside of city limits.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, where the camera is focused and where these people are actually committing the violation is in Seattle. But here's the problem with that. City law stops at the city line.
Sure.
One. Two, King County, unincorporated King County, they haven't approved speed cameras. So that camera is sitting in a place where, one, King County hasn't received any of the money, any of the revenues from that camera, and two, it's outside of the city limits.
Well, and let me share from your story, Jesse, the guy who called you, Reese Rabin, who said exactly what you've been saying.
That camera, to be in compliance with the law, needs to be 20 feet to the east.
And then here's the surveyor that Jesse just told us he went and got.
And to have a traffic camera that belongs to the city of Seattle this far into King County is rather odd.
Okay, so how long has this camera been up, Jesse?
2014.
Okay, so about 5 years, close to 5 years. And how many tickets right. has it fired out?
About 10,000.
At $200 each?
At first it was around $169, and then it went to the $234.
Okay, so we're talking about $2 million in tickets.
Yeah, that is the estimate. Because
yeah, roughly.
We're still trying to figure out exactly what it is. But if you were just to add up the tickets themselves, as if everyone paid, it would be $2 million.
Okay, and so what did... I mean, let me play what Seattle Police Sean Whitcomb said to you, because this didn't fly very well with me.
Providing my own police officer's perspective, I do not believe, as a police officer, that there's any issue with these tickets. That's not a big issue. Ultimately, we do have the authority to issue those types of tickets.
So it's not a big issue to set up a speed cam in unincorporated King County, which has not authorized speed cams. That didn't make any sense to me.
Well, I think at that point, he's just trying to make the case that these people were actually breaking the law. And I get it. They were driving too fast. That I understand. My deal is that if you want to enforce the law, you have to be legal to do it. You have to be within the law.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I get it, but this is a camera. This isn't a cop standing there. You know, it's a pole with a camera on it
well,
in the wrong jurisdiction. And I'm like, okay, I get you. And you're right. I mean, I think people need to slow down in school zones. And I think all of that has to happen. But my point is, the greatest deterrent is actually a cop there. But to put that camera there, it's just,
yeah.
And have it to be in the wrong place.
I mean, they
didn't even get it permitted from the county.
Well, and that's the thing and I thought you did such a great job with this story, and I'd encourage everyone to go to Cairo7.com to watch Jesse's story. But you got a statement, and it sounds like it was kind of a late-breaking statement that you added into the story last night, from the city of Seattle. And it sounds like they said, hey, we have a working agreement with King County to put a pole in the county for Seattle tickets. And then King County's statement didn't say they're lying, but it kind of sounded like they were lying. You know what I mean?
Well, let's just put it this way. I contacted the city of Seattle. I contacted SDOT, and they told me we have this agreement. I'm like, great. Send it to me. Please send it to me as soon as you can.
The agreement between them and King County to put up...
The agreement between King County,
right.
Yes.
Yes.
Please send me that agreement. I can read it for myself.
Sure.
Day one passes, nothing. Day two passes, nothing. Day three passes, nothing. Today, nothing. And so I'm wondering, now understand, during this whole time, they're sending me budgets. They're sending me plans.
Yeah.
They're sending me all kinds of stuff right away. But their argument that they made in writing is that there is an agreement. So I go to King County, and I'm like, hey, is there agreement? King County says, well, we don't have an agreement for that there. I get it. Okay, that's fine. Now the city of Seattle comes back and says, well, now... We're
working on
clarifying.
Yeah.
We're clarifying our agreement to include everything, including the cameras.
Yeah, and that's what government does. Government agencies cover for other government agencies so that we can get screwed over. That's what keeps you and me in business, Jesse.
But here's the deal. When the city of Seattle says we're clarifying our agreement,
right,
and King County, we will move it if King County asks. So I sent that statement over to King County. And you know what King County said?
Huh.
King County said, we support the city of Seattle moving that camera into its own jurisdiction.
Yeah. In other words, get it out of unincorporated and get it within the city limits. Yeah. Oh, man.
City limits. Because there's a lot of issues. I mean, there's a difference between a stop sign and a camera. See, there's just laws had to be written for cameras to actually be able to write these tickets.
Right. No, the legislature had to grant the authority, and there were very strict conditions under which that authority was to be granted. But now all these different agencies and political districts, they're getting drunk on money, and so they're just testing the boundaries every time and everywhere they can.
Indemnification, there are so many different issues out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, God forbid that thing falls, hits a car. County's liable now. It's in the county.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Well, look, hey, it was a great story, Jesse, and I want everyone to go to Cairo7.com to watch it, but just more great work by you. I love government watchdogging. I love what you do.
Dory, you're the best. You know that, man. I love you, man.
I do know that, yeah.
All right. Thank you for the compliment.
Okay, thanks, Jesse. Take care. Jesse Jones, Cairo 7 News, joining us live. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
We love our waterfront. We're going to have, they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars now that the viaduct is down on the Seattle waterfront. I grew up not too far from Golden Gardens, Shill Shoal. I loved riding my bike down to the beach. Ah, you go down, you ride past the marina there at Shill Shoal, and then you get up to the beach, and you walk out, and you look out at a barge filled with homeless people. You go downtown, stop at Ivers, get a little fish and chips. You go up to Myrtle Edwards, and you walk down to the water's edge through the cloud of urine from all the homeless people in Myrtle Edwards. But if you make it through the cloud of urine, you get to the water's edge and you'll look out and see barges of homeless people. You ready for that? Because it's coming. In San Francisco, the Wall Street Journal this week has been reporting on what's going on in San Francisco, where barges, they look like the junks that you see in some third world country waterways. They are filled with these homeless people now. That's the new wave, no pun intended, in the homeless industrial militancy. To take what is most beautiful in a city and to destroy it with a barge of homeless people urinating and pooping in the south. Now, if a boater dares empty his tank in the sound, big tickets, what's going to happen when a barge with dozens of people, when they urinate off the side of it? Because that is exactly what's going on in San Francisco. Tucker Carlson had a story on that last night.
About 100 people are living on a ragtag flotilla of barges, sailboats, and other vessels the paper describes as, quote, decrepit. They aren't all vagrants. Some hold jobs. One woman bought a boat for $15,000 because rent for her studio apartment had grown to $3,000 a month. Do the math. It'll pay for itself in less than half a year. It might sound like an adventure, but it's also third world. Just like tent camps, most boats are not designed to be lived on permanently. During storms, they can endanger lives and cause damage, huge amounts of damage. These flotillas are illegal, by the way. But just like exploding housing prices, Bay Area government doesn't seem very interested in it or serious about fixing it.
And the word is, now that they have done this in San Francisco, Seattle is next, because that's what homeless militancy is all about. Let's make it as visible as possible, and then we will hold the taxpayers hostage. We'll ask for hundreds of millions. You want us off of off of Elliott Bay? You want us off of Shill Shoal? You want this eyesore gone? Build us an apartment and give it to us for free. And then we'll restore the pristine nature of your waterfront. And on Tucker Carlson, I mean, they've been spotlighting what's going on in Seattle. Our city is indeed, or our region, is a national embarrassment.
Seattle's homelessness crisis is deeply connected to the city's drug crisis. That's what we learned when we visited this sprawling encampment off of Interstate 5.
And who do we blame?
Seattle's city government has essentially decriminalized quality of life crimes. Misdemeanor citations have plummeted since 2009.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
The consequence? We'll see it for yourself. Here's a video of a man passed out in a popular park. This picture shows urine on a public staircase near City Hall.
And up next, the homeless barges. The homeless militants want to bring that to Seattle. Get ready to have another beautiful part of our region destroyed by the failure of political leaders. That is your Big Lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We have an amazing interview coming up. I talked to this guy a little bit off the air. Sandeep Ray, the victim of a Kirkland hate crime. Listen to what he's experienced and listen to how his attacker is getting treated by our revolving door of justice. That's next on the Dory Monson Show. Back in September of 2017, about a year and a half ago, there was a brutal attack, a hate crime attack, outside a Kirkland Safeway store. A local man named Sandeep Ray, he just went in to buy a pizza, and when he was coming out, he was jumped, attacked. It was all caught on video, and now he wants to get the word out because his attacker, and this is mind-blowing to me, his attacker is going to be let out of prison early because of good behavior. The victim of this attack, Sandeep Ray, joins us here on Cairo Radio. Mr. Ray, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's start with what's in this video. I saw it on Cairo 7 last night. You're just walking out of the Safeway store when an absolute...
No, in fact, the video was taken by the bystander midway into the assault. The video starts with me kneeling down, but that was not the case. I was just coming, and I'm 6 feet, and this guy is 5 feet. He's shorter than me. So when I was just coming, and he had been just escorted out of the Safeway from the manager because he was verbally abusing an African-American and an Asian guy in racial, slurs. So they complained to the manager. He had been escorted out. So when he had been escorted out, he was looking for a victim. And unfortunately for me, I was coming through the opposite side buying the pizza. Because I just live next to the Safeway.
Okay.
So I was going home. And when he saw me, he started calling me racial names, very filthy, bad words.
Yeah.
And for one time, I thought maybe he was talking to someone else. So I looked back, I saw there was nobody. So then, when I realized that he's calling those racial names to me, I just ignored him because I was not in a mood to fight, and especially with a, and because he looked like a homeless. He has a very shabby trouser, a vest, no shirt, and a lot of beard and uncut hair. So he looks, the first impression, it looks like he's a homeless or a thief.
Right.
So I just thought to ignore him, but then it was really becoming more louder and more aggressive. And then I only told him, "Hey, do I know you? Can you please leave me alone?" And that's when I told him and I started to move. And then suddenly I saw someone running behind me. And before I could do anything, I felt a big bump in my head. It's in the lower head, just above the neck. So what he hit me with a rod. And that momentarily impaired me, and I kneeled down. And okay. That's when the video stops.
Okay.
That's
and when you, and yeah. then what we see in the video, it's really horrifying. He's taken off his shirt. He puts it around your neck. He's trying to choke you out. He's raining punches on your head and face.
In fact, he hit me. He kicked me in my head because he had to put me down. Because that is the only way for him to, you know, get over me. So he, when he managed to put me down, he was upon me, like you say in the video. And then he was choking me, and then I couldn't breathe because I was really, I was thinking that I will die, because you know, for five to ten seconds I couldn't breathe, you know, and anything could have happened. And then when, immediately after that, he put 7 or 8 right hand punches in my left forehead.
Right.
That makes sense because he was upon me. So he was.
Yes.
The way he was putting the right, it would strike my left forehead. So that's what happens.
And then he gets you down on the ground and starts kicking you in the head, right?
Yes.
Okay.
No, he kicked me because I think by the fourth or fifth punch, I passed out. And then what he, when he get up, he just punted in my head. And he fled the scene with the pizza that I was carrying.
Now, in this, this is a guy who had a pretty significant criminal history, right?
Yes. He got 17 criminal records as per the White Pages criminal and also the King County Courthouse. I just sent those proof to the lady whom I talked.
Yeah, to Nicole, my producer, what he did to you was serious enough to be a felony strike in our states. 3 strikes, you're out. He had a previous strike, so he now has 2 strikes. If he were to do this again,
you know, I was very surprised because it was like attempted murder. And back in October 2017, Michael Hogan, who put over this case, I reached out to him and I asked him why he wasn't charged with attempted murder.
Right.
And then Mr. Hogan told me, well, we didn't charge with those charges, which we would be unable to prove. You know, so he told me that the attempted murder charge would be difficult to prove. But the videos, you know, it makes very clear that he was trying to murder me. And when the police caught him in the nearby woods, he told the police that he was lucky that I didn't kill him. That means I was lucky that he didn't kill me.
And Sandeep, you know, I also heard you say to Channel 7 that your injuries were so painful, so long-lasting, that there were times where you wish he had killed you?
Yes, for some... Because the pain was so bothering. I mean, the pain stayed with me for nearly 2 to 3 weeks, and I couldn't go to work for a week. I had to stay at home because my left forehead was like a potato, you know, and I suffered concussion, internal concussion in the brain.
Yes,
you know that because when that happened, they took me to the urgent care. They took the CT scan, the CAT scan. It say I suffered mild concussion. So, you know, and all the pains that I have for the following 2-3 weeks, it was because of that.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I really felt that, you know, it's unbearable to live like this. You know, he should have killed me. You know, he should have killed me that night. Then it would be over for me.
Well, and
but, you know, he didn't kill.
I so agree with you about the prosecutor's office because, and this is the shame of our prosecutors these days, they go for the easiest provable charge, yeah. But to say yes. that what he, I mean, it's clear when you're punching and kicking a guy on the ground in the head that you're trying to kill him and you easily could kill him. So what did they convict him of against you?
Mr. Michael Hogan told me that they had put 3 charges on him. Charge number 1, assault in the second degree. Charge number 2, robbery in the first degree. And charge number 3, malicious harassment, which is the hate crime.
The hate crime, now, right.
Yeah. Now, at the day of sentencing, the prosecuting attorney, Jennifer Peterson, she told me that the charge number 1, robbery in the first degree, had been converted to theft because... it was not an intended robbery. It was totally a hate crime.
Yeah.
So, and since he took my pizza, so it was a simple theft. That's what I've been told.
Okay. So his sentence was 5 years, the original sentence that he got?
Yes.
And you got You got a letter from the Department of Corrections telling you what about this man, about your attacker?
Here's the thing. The judge gave him 5 years sentence. Now, out of those 5 years, he already have been in jail for 18 months before the sentencing. So when we left, the prosecuting attorney, Jennifer Peterson, she told me that you can subtract those 18 months from 60 months, then it would be around, I guess,
3.5 years.
So he would be in 3.5 years in prison. That's what I had been told.
Okay, so three and a half years would take him into 2021.
2021? Yes, something like that.
Right.
Yes. 2022.
So, yeah, 22. I think you're right. 2022. So what was the letter you just got from the Department of Corrections?
I just got the letter. The Department of Corrections say that his probable release date is October 28, 2020. That's what the letters say. And I was totally surprised. I fell from the sky.
So they're going to let him out more than a year early after a brutal, unprovoked, random hate crime attack on you.
Yes. Yes.
Because
to be honest, the judge ordered the restitution of those $30, the pizza that he stole, to be paid to me. And it's been 2 months. I haven't received any check from his family regarding that restitution.
Yeah, so because of good behavior in jail, he's going to be back out on the streets, a guy who has two strikes and a litany of other criminal offenses.
Here's a guy who had been convicted of 17 felonies in and out since 2004, and I just sent the record to your producer. And in the public record, white pages, it say criminal and traffic record is 17 under this guy's name. So this guy shall come out again, shall do crime again, and this will be going on and on, because he had been doing this since 2004, in, out, you know, so this will happen again.
And that's why you're talking to me today, because you are not just fearful, but you're confident that he is going to brutally attack or maybe kill somebody the next time.
Yes. And I'm pretty sure he, because, you know, if you see the video in the courtroom, the sentencing, his face showed no remorse. He was smiling at me.
I even saw one quick little glimpse where he even kind of smirks at the camera.
Yes. And his mother and sister, and I will say this openly, his mother and sister, they were shedding crocodile tears.
I'm sorry.
Supporting him.
Well,
they
sure.
They were supporting him.
Yeah.
They were defending him, you know?
Well, that's what family does. I mean, I don't know that I can fault them for that, can we?
You know, I really don't know what to say. You know, I mean, you know, everything is out in the open.
Yeah.
You know, the public knows everything. The video, everyone can watch it, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I really don't know what to say. I mean, and I think this guy is a never-ending story.
I agree with you. Well, look, I really appreciate you speaking out about this, because it's just another example of our revolving door of justice for felons here in King County. It's outrageous how innocent people like you, victims, are not even considered.
And this was totally hate crime motivated.
Yes, absolutely.
This attack, you know, it wasn't for the pizza.
Yeah,
I don't believe that.
It was
totally for the hate crime.
I know. Hey, look, Mr. Ray, Sandeep, I'm sorry for what you're going through. I appreciate you speaking out about this, and maybe stories like yours will help motivate us to get some change in our criminal justice around here.
Just before I go, I would like to know why I decided to give permission to Cairo to make this video public, because I think William Craft might not attack me again, because, you know, but he will choose another victim.
Sure.
And I don't want this to happen to someone else, which I went through.
I understand.
So that's why that is the main reason I thought I should give Cairo permission to let the public know about this guy.
Yes.
You know, because he's a very dangerous criminal. He's a danger to the community.
And I very much appreciate you talking to me and helping me get the word out about this, because I think it's important. And I really do thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Sandeep Ray, the victim of a brutal hate crime, and his attacker is going to get out because of good behavior. How bizarre is that? I'd love to hear your comments. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973, and we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. We'll be right back. have some information for you a little bit, probably in the Fast 15. Jay Inslee's financials are out. He bought a bunch of local stocks, Amazon, Microsoft last year, but that book he's always touting that makes him an expert on climate change, that Apollo's fire, nothing. I mean, it's like 15,000th among that group of books at Amazon on the bestseller list. So we'll have more on that coming up in the Fastest 15. Dan Rather is speaking out. Dan Rather was on Sirius XM, and he's talking about how bad fake news is generated by President Trump.
Those of us who are in journalism, we know we make mistakes. That's a different thing than fake news. If you want to make the conversation about fake news, which I do not, the single biggest purveyor of fake news in the country is, unfortunately, and there's no joy in saying this, the President of the United States.
Well, you know, Dan Rather makes me sad. Because when I was a young buck, I don't know how old I was, 12, 13 years old, he rode a camera before he was the CBS anchor. It was just when he was the hotshot correspondent who covered Kennedy's assassination, and he covered the thugs at the Democrat convention, the thug police, as he called them, at the Democrat convention. He got cheeky with Richard Nixon when Nixon said, "Are you running for something?" And Dan Rather said, "No, sir, are you?" And he was just kind of a brash, and I thought he was a really cool young reporter. And then I got to know him a little bit. He was on my show a few times, and I had, you know, sit-downs with him at the Democrat and Republican conventions that I've covered when he was the CBS lead anchor, and he was just always a very nice and gracious man. But then he let his hatred of George W. Bush end his career and really overwhelm all of the cool stuff that he had done up till then. When he and his producers faked a National Guard document, passed it off as legit and original when it was written on Microsoft Word, but it was purported to be from 1968, 20 years before Word came out. So Dan Rather, because of his hatred of George W. Bush, was so consumed that he produced fake news that more than counterbalanced all the cool things that he had done in his career. And I was just thinking, man, now that he's talking about Trump, like Trump's a million times worse than Bush, what would be happening if he was still on the air when he gave up his career because of his hatred of Bush? It's crazy, these derangement syndromes. And the Fastest 15 is next.